Hi, everyone, and welcome to the live Fundraising Success webinar, Future Proofing Your Nonprofit, Closing the Imagination Gap by Focusing on the Big Picture, sponsored by CDS Global. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, editor of Fundraising Success and the host for today's event. This is really an exciting topic. There are tons of opportunities for fundraisers to learn about specific techniques and strategies for fundraising, and of course that's vitally important, but sometimes you just have to step back and take a big picture view and get your ducks in a row to ensure that your nonprofit will be around in 10 years. Otherwise, how will you continue your good work? But before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions during and most of them at the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on the console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. And try saying widgets 10 times fast without laughing. Okay, now that that's out of the way, let's meet our presenters. Chip Segru is National Vice President of Customer Strategies for the American Heart Association, and Brian Rich is Managing Director of Little M Media. Brian, would you like to kick things off?
Sure thing. Thank you. And hello, my name is Brian Rich. I am an author and managing director of Little M Media, which is my own company, and I call it an information strategy firm. Really what I do is focus on how people get and share information, the impact that technology is having on all aspects of society, and certainly the way organizations function and how they engage individuals, and then what that means and how we can use particularly communications and what I call Little M Media information experiences and stuff to address that. The slide you're seeing now is a little bit of background about me. All of the slides, as you know, are downloadable and provided, so I always provide that because I think it's important to have a little bit of a lens through which you see someone and the examples and the perspectives that they're giving. So just a couple quick highlights. I am married. I have two young children. My son Henry is 6 and a half. My daughter Lucy is 4 and a quarter. And I assure you that a lot of the ways that we think about engagement and things like fundraising, you know, for me at least, have changed dramatically as I became a parent. I think that's important. I'm a big sports fan. I spent a lot of time working on behavior change with all types of organizations, including those in the serious issue space, so nonprofit organizations in particular. And then if you look on the right side of that slide, what you'll see is a lot of media that I consume, a lot of different magazines and newspapers and television shows and digital channels and people watching and advertising, because a lot of the way that I think about this stuff and the way that I would encourage all of you as we go through this to think about this stuff is looking at the experiences and the perspectives and the lessons that we can take from other industries as well. It's not just about nonprofit organizations and fundraising. It's really about you know, how the world is, you know, changing dramatically and what exciting things we have the opportunity to do now. Before we launch in, Chip, do you want to introduce yourself, and then we'll go right ahead?
Sure. Thanks, Brian. I just realized that I've had as many years in the American Heart Association as your age. So I don't know what that means about today. Maybe it doesn't mean anything, but welcome. My name is Chip Segru. I'm the National Vice President for Customer Strategies at the American Heart Association. Been serving in that role for the last 7 years. But I have 35 years of experience in the nonprofit industry, all working at the American Heart Association, whether that be at the field level in a metro office or an affiliate office or at our national center. I spent 10 years as an executive vice president of an affiliate, actually these three that are listed there, and 9 years as a national affiliate management consultant out of our national center. So I'm pleased to be on the conference and pleased to be sharing the stage with Brian today to share some information about closing that imagination gap. And with that, I'll turn it back to my colleague, Brian.
All right. Well, thank you. So I think sort of important at the top of this is to recognize that both Chip or I could talk about this subject, ad nauseum for hours and hours and hours, both at a conceptual and theoretical level as well as in a very practical and tactical level. For today, we're going to sort of hand off back and forth and try and split up the conversation a little bit. I'm going to take the lead at least initially on some of the strategic conceptual parts of the conversation, and Chip, with his experience at AHA, is going to bring some of it to a more practical perspective, and I think you'll see we go back and forth. So to start, I want to frame this conversation by sort of defining how I look at future-proofing of an organization. And specifically, and I'm going to read it because I want everyone to focus on it for 1 second, always consider the desired outcomes for your efforts and the full range of challenges and opportunities along the way through a comprehensive framework. Truth be told, the most powerful forces in shaping and motivating people's behavior, and in this case getting them to invest in your organization through that lens of fundraising, are imagination, knowledge, and leadership. You need to have a real vision for what it is you want to accomplish as an organization. Your audience needs to have a vision for it wants, what it wants from the world, and how through support of your organization they're going to achieve that. But they also need to have the assurance, if you will, the confidence, the comfort that comes with the engagement and the relationship and the brand. The mistake I think that organizations are making more and more today is they're so focused on the direct interaction, the building of that relationship, the transactions that bring in the money and can be measured by the number of donations or the number of donors, that we often lose sight of that middle piece, that full range of challenges and opportunities, that broader spectrum and that vision and sort of all the pieces that connect the direct, tactical, and in some cases strategic, but particularly tactical operational elements of our jobs as folks working in and around nonprofit organizations and in fundraising, and what it is essentially we got in business to do. And that's what I call the imagination gap. So certainly every organization and every part of an organization, so in this context, all of you who are working on fundraising, have a larger vision for what it is you want to accomplish. I would suggest that for most organizations, those visions are often not ambitious enough. They're not big enough. So they're much more focused on organizational success than they are on, solving the most complex and interesting challenges that exist in society. So, the big piece of the imagination when you're looking at, the vision is the ability to see what is possible, right? Can we, in fact, cure cancer? Can we eradicate hunger and poverty? Can we get every, young person in the United States or anywhere in the world to, the proper level of educational support and literacy so that they can achieve in school at the highest levels, right? You have to have a bold, almost reckless imagination to believe that these incredibly complex problems are going to be solved. But that is what needs to be the driving force behind all the decisions that you make, because when you're extraordinarily focused on today or, next year, the immediate term, and you let the tactics take over and sort of distract you from or cloud that larger ambitious vision, that's when you start to fall behind. So this concept of the imagination gap, as I would define it, is that big piece of the planning and the execution and the learning and a number of other things that we're going to go through that happen between the day-to-day focus that so many of us have and so many of us fall into sort of a bad pattern of, and the larger ambitious, world-changing, mission-driven, very important vision of what it is we're trying to achieve. And the gap is filled by, or I should say, the organizations and our work, your work as fundraisers, is knocked off course by any number of factors, including changes in the audience, right? Maybe your audience gets older or changes the status in life or moves geographically. Certainly technological evolution. We have all experienced, the shift from computers to mobile devices to the cloud, from information that was only communicated in a linear way and in an analog way to the hyper-connected world in which we're now living. Donor behaviors, right? Every time there's another disaster or a shift in consumer behavior and expectations are realigned, the way that donors give and what they expect out of their donor experience changes. And certainly societal shifts, right? There are, demographic forces that are, driving new industries, and their, climate change is affecting the places we live in, and just, things that are disrupting everything we know about how to live. And unfortunately, organizations, and particularly nonprofits and fundraising within the nonprofit industrial complex, if you will, does not move at the same speed, does not change or often embrace the idea of change at the same rate and with the same openness that those types of kind of societal factors change. So what ends up happening is you have this imagination gap. You lose sight of that larger focus. You get very trained on the near term, and you find yourself falling behind or, losing sort of the edge and the ability to adapt very, very quickly. And if we can close that imagination gap and we can change the way that organizations and fundraisers in particular think about the, both the day-to-day challenge and the long-term vision, I think a lot of things will improve. Of course, it's very easy to say, think bigger and be more ambitious and be more efficient. I recognize that every fundraiser has a job, which is, very clear, and the measurements are very apparent. And, you either make your goals or you don't make your goals, and your organization either thrives or it does not. I would suggest that, there is a certain amount of belief that you have to have and confidence that you have to have in this type of approach and this type of system for this to work. But when you have that, you can start to get into the practical stuff. So let me quickly go through six things that I think can help you future-proof your nonprofit organization, close the imagination gap, and certainly enhance your fundraising efforts. And then I will hand off to Chip to go into a bit more detail. So number one, big ideas. I talked about the larger ambition for the organization as a whole, but that same responsibility to have big ideas falls to every single one of us. And particularly in the fundraising space, I think big ideas are often not embraced. And by big ideas, I'm talking about, boldly going after new audiences or developing entirely new ways of engaging with people and enhancing value and creating a dynamic that will change the whole fundraising process, right? Fundraising, as we all know, is not about transactions and it's not about dollars raised. It's about fulfilling the vision and enabling organizations to do what it is that they need to do. But fundraising in and of itself is, the creation of a very important connection and, a path for communication. So you have to have these big, ambitious ideas. You have to say, I want every person in the United States to be a donor, even if that person is only going to give a dollar or 10 cents, right? Or, I'm going to raise $1 billion, whether it's through big or small donations. Those big ideas are what will help to drive and shape really ambitious and compelling and sustainable fundraising efforts. Two, clear priorities. Priorities can be established for many reasons. The one that I would suggest or that I would encourage you to prioritize, particularly through this lens of future-proofing, is what are the activities that you as an organization or you as an individual in the fundraising space are going to learn the most from? Right now, I think most priorities within organizations are set on what is going to yield the quickest return, what is going to, make the biggest splash or get us the most attention. But as organizations are forced to change and as society is changing so quickly around us, it's not enough just to be faster or more efficient or more cost effective, we have to think about how we're going to adapt and evolve as organizations. So the clear priorities increasingly need to include what are we going to learn most from, what is going to give us the ability to fail, take advantage of that failure, and implement the learnings from that failure quickly so that we cannot make the same mistakes over and over again. Three, practical intelligence. Of course, we are, awash in data and all sorts of different metrics that we are using, but we're not doing a really terrific job anticipating the issues or creating the pathways, the new pathways and the new opportunities for creating relationships with donors or interesting new donors or expanding different revenue options if you want to take the broader definition of fundraising. So not only do we need to look at data, but we need to look predictive and proactively. We need to look forward using our data and using the intelligence that we have. So everything we're thinking about is applicable and again, is future-proofing in nature. We can't rely, which is what we're doing now as nonprofit organizations, and particularly in the fundraising space, so heavily on analytics that look back at things that we have done and essentially try and revise history. We can learn a lot from the analytics and the work that we've done before, but more importantly, we have to look at the ways to use the data and use the intelligence to predict or shape or manage the risk of everything that's going to happen in the future so we can be prepared for that much more. For smart execution, at the end of the day, fundraising, like everything else, is about execution. Smart execution, to me, is, less about, some of the tired things that everybody talks about forever, no silos and, better, smarter interaction between teams, less, subject matter expertise and more general expertise so that, you're not just a fundraiser, but you also have data analysis capabilities and technical capabilities and communications capabilities, and you understand digital and analog, right? We are very good at creating organizational structures and roles and responsibilities and job descriptions based around very defined skills. But in a constantly changing, hyper-connected world, you can't have somebody play their role. We're only as strong as our ability as a team, as an organization, to execute. And, of course, we all know that fundraising, significantly contributes to overall brand, to the ability for programmatic elements to be pursued, just as much as the way that an organization communicates, the leadership, all of that, and all of the choices and activities that they pursue impact your ability to raise money. We have to be smarter and more collaborative in the way that we execute. We also have to be faster. The world is changing really quickly. The expectations and the experiences of the audience are shaped in an instant, and they're constantly being changed by all the different experiences that people have. We still, as nonprofit organizations, and particularly as fundraisers, think way too much in isolation. We think that fundraising is somehow disconnected from everything else that people are spending their money on. We think that our charitable organization or our nonprofit and the issues that we care about are, somehow more important or the only issues that the audience is caring about. Right? The average person is bombarded with, 10, 15,000 competing different messages every day, marketing messages and solicitations and learning opportunities and certainly just, human challenges, just to survive the day and enjoy our lives. We have to be much faster about learning what's changing and learning what people want and adapting and changing, and that includes what I mentioned before, which is failing very quickly, making mistakes intentionally, learning from it, and, not waiting a month or a week, or years to dramatically change the way you're structured or the way that you're running something. If something didn't work today and you're doing another variation on it tomorrow, you better have applied the learnings that you took from today, whether they are heavily proven through data or just gut feel and anecdotes. We can't wait around and have six meetings if we want to keep up as organizations and not fall behind. And then last, the thing that I would challenge all of you to have from a fundraising perspective, from a nonprofit standpoint, from just any organizational capacity, is an insatiable curiosity. you know, there are some people who are absolutely wired to go to work every day and be given assignments and do that work and leave it on their desk at 5 o'clock and go home and, you know, have a very rich life. Those are not the people who are going to be given the responsibility or going to have the ability to keep an organization, you know, leaning forward and taking advantage of or bolstering itself for the future. You have to ask questions. You have to constantly be looking at everything that you're doing inside and outside of the office, inside and outside of the fundraising space, inside and outside of everything related to your work, and saying, what can I learn from that? How can I change that? What can be applied? That insatiable curiosity is the number one thing, even though I listed it as number six, the number one thing that is going to keep your organization from falling behind and future-proof you against all of those societal and technological changes that we know are going to occur. So with that, let me toss it over to Chip and let him see if you know how he can help make some of this conceptual stuff that much more practical and applicable to the work that you're all doing every day.
Thanks, Brian. So what we thought we'd do is just share a case study pairing up some of Brian's concepts with an American Heart Association project. But before I dive into the project, we know that we have a wide range of people representing nonprofits of many different sizes on the call today. And I guess what I want to stress is that it's really not the size of the organization that you work for that is important when we're talking about this case study. It's really the concept of future-proofing your organization, no matter how big or how small the organization that you work for might be. In our case, we had a serious problem in that we didn't really know how we were acknowledging our donors. And so we, you know, we have the map here. There's 100 shows the AHA 7 affiliates, but within those 7 affiliates, there's 130 offices. And I would imagine that all 130, while they thought they were doing it in excellent fashion, they were probably doing it 130 different ways and couldn't imagine that they needed to change how they were doing things at all. Yet as we dug a little bit further into our issue, we discovered many, many challenges. We found out that we weren't even capturing close to the 2 million offline transactions that we were experiencing throughout the course of a year. Many of those went uncaptured, which, of course, led to lost opportunities for cultivation, for renewal, and certainly more uncertainty regarding whether we were appropriately thanking, cultivating, or at a minimum meeting the IRS receding regulations. So, you know, a big problem for us in that we didn't really know how good we were doing, but whenever you have to ask that question, how good are you doing, oftentimes it'll lead to an answer that you're not doing as well as you want to do or need to do, and that certainly was the case in our experience. So we were charged with really finding a solution that would provide consistency across the organization, those 130 offices. Certainly it had to be cost effective. It had to be scalable based on quantity. We certainly had to be trackable because we weren't doing a good job of tracking. And it certainly had to improve the data quality for the organization. So the statement here is, you know, finding a solution that met all those needs. And when we got together, we had no idea how we were going to solve it, but we knew we had to do something different, and that what we were currently doing and was not good enough. But we felt that these 5 things listed on the slide here would help us get to what was needed to solve the problem. But when you look at our clear priorities and vision, going back to Brian's earlier slide, we definitely had a clear priority around what we needed to do here. We knew we needed to streamline donation processing and reporting procedures. We knew we needed to get accurate daily information into our accounting systems and our CRM system. We knew, of course, we needed that IRS letter acknowledgement mailed, and then we knew that in order to do that, it would be important for us to make sure the donors were segmented based on how they gave to the organization and cultivated based on how they gave to the organization too. When you look at practical intelligence for AHA, certainly this would not have worked if we didn't have the buy-in from the fundraising or development department, the finance department, or in our organization, what we call the customer department. Those were key partnerships where we needed commitment and collaboration. And I love this picture of the boat because we had to make sure everyone was in the same boat, rowing in the same direction, and that would be, you know, including our technology partners who were key to us in terms of finding a solution. But it's really interesting because in this case, everybody had to give up something in order for us to be successful. You know, I'm estimating that maybe we were only capturing 55% of our donations into our systems at about this time, but the finance group was all worried about how the deposit was going to be made and would it show up in the accounting system in a timely manner. The revenue side or the development side was certainly interested in how they were going to be able to track the total dollars. And then our customer group was certainly interested in capturing the details and getting that into the database so that we could actually have an opportunity to do the thank you. So when we got together, we really had I love this term, smart execution. For us, we were not given a prescribed solution. And so no one said, go and do this or go and do that. What they said was solve the problem. So we were lucky that we didn't have a prescribed solution. We were just instructed to go fix it. And we considered many options in doing this. We considered internally, what could we do? How much would it cost? How would it be done? We considered an external or a partnership with another nonprofit to handle some of this work. And then we were also looking at outsourced. And those were our three options. But we didn't have a solution from the beginning. And I think throughout the course of this, until we got to a decision, we probably thought we were going to go internal. And then for a while we thought we were going to do external, and then for a while we thought we were going to do outsource. So, you know, as we worked through this, we really considered all those options. We had a cross-functional project team that understood the end result and what we were trying to accomplish, and I think that's very important. It was a group that was able to think out of the box, yet none of us were experts in the total process. So we didn't have somebody from the beginning to end that understood what needed to be done for the total process. We had peers in the room that had expertise that they brought to the table individually. They were very collaborative, as I mentioned earlier, certainly open to any of the three possibilities. The key for us was what would be the best solution for the organization, both short-term and long-term. As we looked at our options, we discussed and were, to use Brian's term, curious about new opportunities those options would bring us and that would exist in the future as a result of our efforts. And there is no doubt we had many challenges along the way, but we always kept that end result in focus. And we knew we needed a solution sooner rather than later. And it was the solution that we actually picked was the outsource solution that one of the reasons we picked it was because it was the shortest time to implement. So, Brian, I'm going to switch back to you to share some more on Bridging the Imagination Gap.
Excellent. So I think one of the things that often comes up in a conversation like this, particularly when, you know, folks like Chip and I are sort of going back and forth between you know, his organization's experience and sort of conceptual stuff is how do we apply that to our work? So let's transition a little bit for the rest of this and focus on some practical things that I hope, and I know Trip will then follow on some of the stuff I have, that we hope you could go back and start to work on right now. So sort of aligned with the six from before, here are six, right? When you're thinking about the big vision and the big ideas, my suggestion is to focus on solving problems. I often think about this as counting down instead of counting up, right? So rather than through a fundraising lens saying we want to raise as much money as possible or we want to have as many donors as we can get, be very specific and say we need 100 new donors this week or this month, or from this event we want to make sure to get 50% of the people who are already donors to give more or to give again. A lot of you probably already do this, but that kind of problem-solving focus provides you two things. One, it certainly gives you focus, but more importantly, it gives you a very specific benchmark against which you can determine whether or not you are evolving and improving as an organization. You're able to say, we did or didn't meet that goal, and not have any confusion about the fact that you may have raised, a ton of money or more money than you've ever raised before, but you in fact didn't, solve for the problems that you positioned yourself as having that will allow you to, be that much more prepared or that much more effective as an organization the next time around. It's the solving problems focus is a way to, get out of the patterns and get out of the systems, that you're in, and continually improve and evolve the systems. Two, when you're talking about prioritizing, really the thing that I would say is stop being mediocre. Not every organization, not every fundraiser, not every fundraising operation within an organization is going to be fantastic at everything. Not everybody is going to put on great events. Not everybody is going to be able to build a small donor program. That's okay. And in fact, outside of experimenting and figuring out what type of area you really are excellent and uniquely qualified to excel at, you should stop doing the things that you're not good at. There's nothing wrong with being, an organization that only develops relationships and brings in large donations, particularly if any resources, any energy, any focus is being put towards developing a small donor program that is just not ever going to fly because it's just not in alignment with what you're doing, or vice versa. So stop being mediocre, and by stopping being mediocre, it certainly allows you to prioritize the activities you should be spending your time on, the things you should be learning, and certainly the challenges that are coming down the pike that you need to most effectively address. Three is get nerdy. This is a relatively new thing with the availability of data, with the the advancements of technology. Even though fundraising is very much about relationships and values and the human connection that you create with donors and between the organization and the people who are supporting it and what they believe and what they expect from the world, there is tremendous science available to you. There is all sorts of information both within your organization and the nonprofit realm, as well as I mentioned before, from all sorts of different industries to give you much more intelligence into what audiences are likely to do, what they want, how you can support them, and so on. So get nerdy. And if you aren't the nerdy type, if you're not a number cruncher or a data analyst, find someone who is, because not having that voice as a critical part of your fundraising infrastructure and your ability to predict and shape the behavior of the people who you want to invest in your organization, you're just setting yourself up for disappointment and putting yourself at a disadvantage. For reverse engineering, we are very good in managing organizations and creating fundraising and other plans at setting a goal and sort of then setting out and going to try and achieve that goal, walking boldly forward in a straight line and encountering whatever we encounter and dealing with it as we need to deal with it. in a world that is no longer sort of operating in a way that is linear, we can't do that anymore. There are so many different reasons and influences and inputs both on you as individuals, on your audience, on the organization, on society, that everything is all kind of jumbled up and moving very quickly. The easiest way to organize yourself and to be much more operationally and executionally effective is to reverse engineer. Figure out what it is you're trying to do. So let's use the event context. You want to put on an event. You should start by imagining, literally imagining, every single element of that dinner. What's going to be served? What are the seats going to look like? How are people going to get checked in? And then start to walk backwards from there and say, okay, do we have enough parking? You know, do people have directions? What are we mailing to them? How are we mailing them that? You know, who are we mailing it to? Just people who confirmed or everybody? And so on and so forth. It sounds very granular, but if you reverse engineer, then you are able to identify the areas that are likely to be the most challenging and the areas that need to be prioritized is where you're going to solve for some problem much more readily than if you go forward and then encounter some issue or, you know, dive down the rabbit hole and try to solve a problem only to realize that that problem maybe wasn't solvable or that was not the problem that once you had a solution was going to unlock a whole bunch of other opportunities. Reverse engineering changes the whole dynamic of the planning process, allows you to execute more intelligently. Five, pivot constantly. Look, the reality is we don't really know what's going on. We don't know what is going to change, what some donor is going to say. We can use our past behaviors as a guide, but we really need to just be prepared to not have things work. And the best way to be prepared for things not working is not to get frustrated or to abandon ship, but rather to constantly pivot, to constantly make small and deliberate and intelligent changes to whatever you're doing. You hear a lot about this in the digital context, A/B testing of different messages and, et cetera. But you really should just, I think, start to embrace organizationally and within the fundraising operation in particular, the idea that you're going to be running multiple streams of activity at any given time. You're going to be constantly assessing and learning and analyzing and reshaping what you're doing and being very comfortable with pivoting, and that includes changing personnel or, scrapping something completely or, when given an opportunity, running off, and finding a way to experiment with that new opportunity that comes with you because you're going to learn from it. That kind of pivoting is critical. The organizations that are still running the same systems or run systems without that kind of flexibility are the ones that are falling behind and finding themselves, at a serious disadvantage, if not sort of a critically dangerous place because they've fallen behind. And then last, obviously, in the insatiable curiosity place is just ask questions. Ask questions of yourself. Ask questions of your colleagues. Ask questions of everybody you encounter. What do you think? Why did this happen? What are we learning from this? There's so much sitting on our hands, so much doing things because we've always done it, that it's like the old boiling frog analogy, right? If you toss a frog into a boiling pot of water, the frog's going to know he's in trouble and he's going to jump out. If you put a frog in a, cold pot of water and you start to turn the heat up, the frog's not going to realize that the change is happening and eventually you're going to have frog legs. And, no one wants to be in that position of doing the same things and then finding themselves fried. So keep asking questions because it's those questions that are going to trigger all sorts of new ideas and new opportunities to do whatever you need to accomplish 1 through 5 that I just went through. Chip, you want to take it home from there?
Sure, Brian. And there were times during our project where I certainly felt like the frog, for sure. But, when we look at solving our problems and stopping being mediocre, which I think we were at the time, we were able to select a solution that allowed us to do things that were never possible before. So that included, a consistent process across 130 different offices within our organization. And to be able to track a batch from the time that batch was created through the whole entire process to the time that batch hit hit the accounting software and our CRM system. Those were all things that needed to be excellent, or this would not work for us. When you look at what we were able to get from Capture, I think we went beyond mediocre there because we were now able to capture all our offline transactions. And that led certainly to a better opportunity for us to get a better view of who was donating to us. I mean, it's actually kind of embarrassing not to know, because we weren't capturing who our donor was and what they were giving to us. We were also able to give our staff better visibility into the process, so they were able to go and look up and make sure things were processed the way they needed to be processed. And then certainly a side benefit for us, now that we were capturing donors, we didn't need to rent them for, or rent as many of them, for our direct response programs. So before, these donors were unknown to us, they weren't captured, so we might have been renting them as part of our direct response program, and now we're having an opportunity, because we knew who they were and we capturing them, that we didn't have to rent them anymore. And certainly there were other things in terms of minimizing redundancies that were happening at each individual office. I think the most important thing for us, though, is that we solved the initial problem, which was produce a consistent acknowledgement letter that met those IRS guidelines. There were other side benefits and things that really helped us, but the key one was, could we produce that IRS letter in a consistent manner? When we went through this this process, I think it's really important that, you know, before you can move forward, you have to achieve great execution around that newly implemented work process. And, you know, we rolled out in phases to all of the offices, but we were able to get really good execution around what we were trying to achieve. But certainly right after that, and maybe even in the middle of rolling out, we were asked to do other things because other great minds saw new opportunities and efficiencies that resulted as a result of new work processes. And for us, that was anything from, gee, can we produce a different type of letter for a different donor, to, gee, how can we handle the repeat donor a little bit differently than a donor, recognizing that they've made more than one gift to us, how can we handle that person differently with a different acknowledgement letter? But probably the biggest thing for us was, right in the middle of our implementation, or at least towards the end, was in our attempt for continuous improvement, we looked at the opportunity to move to a scanning option. And when you think about asking the questions and remaining curious around that, we first did a pilot, and we looked at the data from that pilot and determined, you know, we can successfully move to a scanning model and get all the benefits of this new work process and more, including additional speed and some cost savings of scanning versus overnight mailing. And but when we did that, that offered a whole new set of challenges for us, including going back and reworking the process that we had just set up a few short months ago. So we started with that new endpoint in mind and kind of re-engineered back from there, as Brian mentioned in a previous slide, and we were able to convert 100 of our 130 offices to scan versus mail their information. And there are some great benefits to our organization for that, including some cost savings on postage and some cost savings around envelope costs, and some additional speed in getting our information into our systems. When you look at a little bit more about reverse engineering and some things to really think about, is in our acknowledgement, we took the opportunity to ask our customer if they wanted additional information. So our acknowledgement letter comes with you know, a checkbox, for lack of a better word, where they can ask us for a free copy of our Plan Giving Wills and Estates materials, or they can sign up to volunteer, or we'll provide them research information, or we'll connect them as part of our You're the Cure Advocacy Network. And we also had a soft ask for additional donations. So when we changed our processes, it forced us to create new workflows around what I would call fulfillment. And now we needed to develop whole new processes for handling these requests that we were getting for plan giving, wills and estates, and the others that I mentioned. And those were nice to have and nice to get, but they also needed to be consistent within our organization. So that's why we had to go back and rework those. And certainly a new process was needed regarding how we were handling the soft ask donations that were being returned to us and the new acknowledgement letter that needed to be sent out, because we didn't want to send the same acknowledgement letter that we had sent previously from their first gift. When you look at pivoting constantly, and we had some great unanticipated consequences, certainly the number of donations being captured now, and I mentioned earlier we thought we were capturing 55% of our donations. My guess is it was probably less than that, because during certain times of the year, we stressed daily our data systems. So information coming into our CRM system on a daily basis was stretched just because of the volume of what we were trying to put into the system. We certainly received more requests for plan giving information than we ever anticipated. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we had to develop those new work processes to meet the demand for information. And we probably could have done a better job of anticipating that, but we just didn't know. So when that started happening to us, we certainly needed to pivot quickly. When you look at what it's meant for us over the last 5 years, I'm not going to go through all these numbers. There you can see them. But certainly what we did do is we got beyond mediocre. Are we perfect yet? No, we're not perfect. We're better than we were before. We're pleased with the results. You know, some key bullets that I would point out here is that we added 5 million new donors to our CRM system. So that's about 1 million a year over the last 5 years. And now we're able to use that information smarter in trying to build relationships, stronger relationships with those donors. And then certainly we had some other savings around acquisition costs, and certainly we had transactions that we were tracking and income that we were processing, which was all good. But the key thing that I want to come back to is, and the most important thing for us, was delivering an acknowledgement letter that met IRS guidelines in a consistent manner across the organization. So with that, I'll turn it over to Brian for a look at some common questions.
Sure. So I think we want to leave, you know, as much time at the end to answer questions that folks have submitted. Let me skip ahead one slide, actually. There's both my contact information and Chip's contact information. As we said, the deck will be available, you know, for download. So by all means, if there are questions that you don't get a chance to ask now or, want to submit, you know, I think both of our goals is, you know, to be as helpful as possible as we think about a lot of this stuff. The two common questions that I think, you know, Chip and I had talked a little bit about before and that we know we often get, you know, are one, how does this stuff apply to my organization, right? I'm not AHA. I don't have that budget. I don't have that staff. I don't have that flexibility. Maybe I'm a one-person team. The reality is, and you know, I think Chip did a great job, making this point, is, you know, these challenges are universal. It's the response you obviously will have to tailor to the organization. So there's nothing about, being nerdy or prioritizing or, pivoting regularly that is reserved for organizations with lots of resources or, you know, lots of expertise and staff and whatnot to apply. And in fact, the more nimble, the smaller, you know, the team is in a lot of cases, the more ability there is to be nimble, the more ability there is to ask those questions and think about the other stuff. The other common question, at least certainly that I get, is where do you start, right? There's so much to do, it feels overwhelming. What I would say, and you know, Chip, feel free to add on, what I would say is two things. One, you know, just start, because part of the challenge of future-proofing the organization and figuring out what's changing and how to adapt in fundraising is to just start doing things. There's no perfect, there's no complete plan, there's no roadmap that applies in the same order to everyone. You know, what we've been talking about is a framework for that. And two, you know, the place to start is with what's not working. Everybody has a long list, if you really, you know, think about it for a moment, of things that haven't worked for a while, haven't worked as well as you want them to, that anyone in 5 minutes coming in from the outside would see are an issue. Biggest problem is organizational and individual inertia, people's willingness to think ahead and embrace the idea that change is happening and that we need to be, you know, future-proofing, and that what we get done before the end of the day is not necessarily the most important thing to the long-term success of the organization. So start by just stopping the stuff that isn't working. Start by, you know, just being self-aware enough as an organization or as a fundraiser to say, you know, this is a challenge that we're going to have to figure out how to deal with. So even if it's 15 minutes, I'm just going to devote a little bit of time, you know, to start thinking differently and start future-proofing.
Brian, the only thing I would add, the only thing I would add to that was, don't try and boil the ocean in what you're trying to do. Pick one thing that's not right now and work to fix that, and use the concepts or the 12 concepts that you laid out there to try and answer that question.
Absolutely. So I think with that, you know, we are happy to answer any questions we have, and if there's stuff we don't get to, then, you know.
We'll get to it later.
We'll get to it later.
Great. Thank you, guys. I just love the way you synced your presentations up. That was just perfect, and I think you really did a great job of illustrating for our audience what it was that you were talking about. But the thing that keeps coming to my mind through everything that you were saying is the thing that I keep hearing over and over and over again, no matter what we're talking about, is when you want to make change, is buy-in. If you are in the fundraising department and you are looking at, okay, we're way too focused on this and this and this, and nobody is really looking at the big picture, nobody is doing these things that these guys just talked about, what do you do? How do you go to your, you know, executive director or whoever and say, we have to make this change?
Yeah, make a comment and turn it over to Brian. I think if you've got the data, and hopefully you have, if you've got the data that shows what the problem is, and if you go into your exec with the data plus some solutions that you have in mind that might not be fully baked yet, but at least, hey, here are a couple things that we can do, I think that's where I would start in terms of just trying to get their attention. Then I would jump into talking about some of the things that we're trying to that were mentioned today on the call.
I totally agree with that. The other thing that I would add is I think, you know, waiting for buy-in is you know, often not going to work. You know, it takes time for people and organizations to change, and it takes, you know, entrepreneurial thinking, you know, individual efforts by all of you, you know, to start to make advancements. So, by all means, you know, go and ask for approval or get buy-in, but there are plenty of ways to start future-proofing and to start getting smarter and being nerdier and all these things that we talked about that don't require buy-in, that don't require funding, that don't require approval, that don't require support from leadership. And I think, it would be a good excuse if you didn't have buy-in, but it will not produce a good outcome if you wait for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me take a look at some of the questions that we have. I'm going to read this one because I'm having a little bit of a hard time getting my own mind around it. But How can organizations better separate inputs from outputs and hold themselves accountable for progress in outputs, even if those outputs defy measurements? Does that make sense?
Let me take that quickly. I actually think that the line between inputs and outputs is blurring, and so that's why, you know, what I said earlier about framing things as solving problems and being very specific about what those problems are that need to be solved is a good way to think about it. You know, you can generate endless amount of activity. You can have a tremendous success as an organization, raise tons of money, get lots of attention, be programmatically influential in society and still be, you know, just a couple small tweaks in what's happening in the world from, you know, your doors closing, just the same as, you know, any brand or company or, you know, campaign out there. So I think the lens is not to look at inputs and outputs, not to look at, if you will, you know, straight up activity metrics or analytics as the way to determine progress, but to, on the quantitative side, to look at whether or not you've in fact solved for the problem that you articulated, and on the qualitative side, if you feel as an organization that you are in fact learning, which, by the way, in a lot of cases is going to feel a little uncomfortable. It's going to make you a little queasy because you're going to be getting into territory that is not well-worn and is not, entirely mapped out. So when you feel a little queasy and a little uncomfortable, that's probably a good sign of progress as well.
Chip, did you want to add anything to that?
Maybe I made him
okay. Well, a lot of this is talking about, well, you did mention getting out of your comfort zone and talking about taking risks. And kind of going back to this question that you just answered, if something really is difficult to measure, if you're going to challenge yourself or you're going to take a risk on something that's difficult to measure, how do you really decide whether or not it was a good thing to do? I mean, if it doesn't immediately show itself in numbers, losses or gains, how do you measure that?
So I think there's two things. One, everything is measurable. You just have to define the measurement. That does not mean that the metrics exist, and it does not mean that those metrics are easy to capture. But you can always create or apply some measurable standard to everything. And that measurable standard could be, you know, a binary, a yes or a no, an A or a B, you know, is it different than before? That is still a measurement. The other thing that I would say is, change for many organizations now, particularly while we're still making sense of all the craziness and the shifts that are going on in the world, the very fact that things are changing is in and of itself a sign that progress is being made. That sometimes that change looks negative. People get disillusioned and they leave the organization. Well, that's going to happen when, you know, people are asked to work differently and, you know, take on different responsibilities. You know, some donors are going to get disillusioned by a shift in messaging. Not only is that a learning opportunity, but maybe it is also a sign that, you know, as an organization or as a fundraising operation, you know, you're going to evolve, and that means some of the legacy elements are going to fall off. So, you can create a measurable standard for anything. You may have to create it yourself. You shouldn't rely on existing metrics in most cases to measure things that have never been done or never been done by your organization. And two, you know, if you know where you are and you know where you're heading, you'll be able to sense or measure, if you will, the fact that there's progress, that there's movement, and that that alone, in terms of the future-proofing conversation, I think is a key element.
That's a great question. How does the organization's board fit into this process?
Chip, do you want to talk board specifics first?
Margaret, could you repeat that?
How does an organization's board fit into this transitional process of looking at bigger picture and future proofing?
Oh, that's a great question, because in my opinion, the board needs to be kept informed along the way. And I think we've had experiences where our board members have actually pushed us to move in certain directions because maybe we weren't acting fast enough. So certainly as part of a strategic plan that would have been approved by a board, that's a great way to keep them involved and get their input on helping to future-proof the organization because they certainly have a stake in how the organization adjusts for the future.
No, I'm sorry. I just realized we are out of time. We've actually run over this great conversation. Thank you so much. On behalf of Fundraising Success and CDS Global, I'd like to thank everyone for attending today's webinar and also our speakers. It was just a great conversation. Thanks so much. And don't forget to look for sorry, I'm reading the wrong script, actually. If you take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that is on your screen right now, we'd be grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars that we bring to you in the future. Thanks again, everybody.